Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, it's Sprague here. Really appreciate you listening. You're about to get some podcast excellence. It's presented by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
It's time for Dirt and Sprague.
I've never been on live television before, but apparently sometimes I don't watch the news.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Because I'm a kid, and apparently Grandpa just gives me the remote after we watch the Powerball.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
We'll probably sit around and cook some soups and eat bread and desserts and just get all fat and sassy.
The Fan.
I can't keep on losing you.
Let's do this. Final hour, Dirt and Sprague on a Thursday. Thanks for being with us on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan.
You see the weather for the next week?
It's looking beautiful, man.
Ooh.
Looking beautiful. We pull the hurricane audio? Do we have that?
I sent it to him.
It's
about a minute 20.
That needs to get dove into. We will do that at some point here.
Not
in the
that
final
the hurricane's
hour.
A laughing
no,
matter.
No, no.
But
the audio does make you chuckle a little bit. We got a lot to get to. We'll start, though. Quite the 48 hours in the sports world. And joining us now, Jerry Brewer, Washington Post sports columnist. You can go give him a follow on Twitter, at Jerry Brewer. We're having him on because he wrote a piece yesterday that stood out to the both of us entitled "For Black Athletes, Social Unrest is Not a Game, and This Historic Action is an Urgent Plea." Jerry, thanks so much for the time, man. Phenomenal piece yesterday. We've tweeted it out for our listeners to go find. Can you walk me behind what it's like as you're sitting down trying to write this? I mean, we're all trying to digest what's happening in real time. And of course, the events on Sunday unfolding as the week goes on, the NBA players not playing. Just what was it like for you to sit down, put this on paper and write this as a column?
Well, first you have to get over the shock. And, your first words want to be curse words that would not be allowed in a family newspaper. And you have to get through all of that and try to distill it to the essence. You know, okay, let's take a deep breath. What's going on? Why did it happen? What do people need to know? And people were shocked to have to reflect upon some things. It was supposed to be uncomfortable, and it was about as uncomfortable as it's ever going to get for sports as a whole. We're used to individuals doing things that we don't like, whether it's Colin Kaepernick kneeling or John Carlos and Tommy Smith raising their black fist or Muhammad Ali protesting and blustering and doing his thing. But we're not used to an entire league coming together with this kind of uniformity and solidarity and sense of mission. And then the fact that they were able to do that inspired and or pressured other leagues to doing something of the same. And that's when you create 48 hours of chaos in a sports world that is used to just going on a schedule and not having any disruption from that schedule. So for the second time this year, we've had this historic disruption to the sports schedule for very different reasons. And so trying to capture the power of that and the meaning of that is why you do the job. And as you guys know, I mean, it's kind of the same thing in writing as it is in radio. Sometimes you can do it in an hour or two or 3 hours. Sometimes you have to do it in two or three shows.
Yeah.
You know, Jerry, you mentioned Colin Kaepernick, and one of the NBA writers made note that the day he knelt, August 26th, 4 years ago, the same day the Bucks create this and lead to the NBA striking and kind of protesting, in that 4 year span to the day, what have you thought of the way this country has viewed this same issue that has been talked about by these athletes in that 4 years?
Well, I think the reason that we are where we are 4 years later is that none of the lessons of Colin Kaepernick and the rest of the NFL were learned. I mean, we're still arguing about the messaging of this and Black Lives Matter and excessive police force and those kinds of things. People are still arguing the framing of the issue, which means that you have no hope in any real solution or penetrating. I mean, enough people care about it, but I'm talking about real penetrating compassion to where it breaks and it hits everyone in America, or at least 90% of America, in the heart. We're not even close to that. And I think the reason that a lot of these things have happened is because, like, it really does feel like no matter who you are, you're marching in the street yelling and just hoping that you're not going to get tear gas and rubber bullets shot at you. And I think the NBA players realized as they came to this bubble, you know, they had such energy, momentum, such passion behind it. Mm-hmm. All the platform, all the popularity they have, and all the determination they have in sending the message, they're still going unheard. And they felt, out of a sense of desperation, they decided to do something more bold than they've ever done before. And, you know, people can look at them as rabble rousers or starting stuff, but I think it was one of the most selfless acts that you could possibly have. You're sacrificing your popularity and you're threatening your wallet. You know, if people decide to turn off the NBA mm-hmm. and numbers that revise the salary cap and all that, you're risking all of that. And you consider risking even more. If you had just decided we don't play anymore the rest of this year, you're risking all of that just to make people care more about the lives of Black people
right.
in this country. And so it was incredibly selfless, not perfect, but incredibly selfless, I thought.
Yeah, we're talking with Jerry Brewer. He's a sports columnist for The Washington Post. Go give him a follow on Twitter, at Jerry Brewer. He wrote a great piece. We tweeted it out. Go check it out. There's a line in there that stood out. He said, human ingenuity can insulate them from a virus that has killed nearly 180,000 Americans, but there's not enough human decency to create a bubble effective against racism. You mentioned what they're risking in doing something like this. I have wondered, you know, I feel like athletes are more and more understanding the power of their voice and the impact that they can have when they do things like this, the shockwaves that it can create. Is this something that you see becoming a regular occurrence of, you know, you kind of mentioned that we all go back to our daily lives eventually, especially those of us who aren't affected by racism, that don't have to deal with it day in and day out. They kind of, it can drift back to the, well, you're dealing with other stuff. And, oh yeah, I remember when that, is that still going on? And then this, like, this kind of snaps you back into attention. Is this something you think athletes will continue to do to just reshape the dialogue that's existing in America?
Yeah, I think they've become emboldened and they've really kind of understood the influence that they have. And so I don't think in a lot of ways, like, standing up is going to go away. I mean, everything is going to become a little more muted, and it kind of depends on, you know, where society goes. You know, do laws get passed at a national level, at a local level, who gets elected president, all of those things matter. But I think the one lasting thing from this moment is going to be that there's a new standard for civil disobedience in sports. And there's a new understanding that of repercussions from athletes for when they hear that people are ignoring their concerns. And so this is a period of discomfort on so many levels throughout sports. You know, it's the way we engage with them has changed dramatically from the way that we engage with sports, say, at the Super Bowl in right. February. And so that's really tough for people to deal with. But I think one thing we should keep in mind, like, now this is in the playbook. And this isn't just going to – I don't know if people are ever going to do this for something as difficult – to get people to understand as systemic oppression. However, I would not be surprised if college football players, college basketball players are watching, a display like this during the NCAA tournament or the college football playoff would shock the world. Mm-hmm. They're already like, when you think about the women's national soccer team and the women's national hockey team, mm-hmm. they're already in it for a good fight. You know, they love that good trouble anyway, to try to get fair pay. And you start wondering, like, is it in their playbook? Does it matter so much to them for future generations to say, you know, this world championship, this World Cup, this Olympic Games, we just ain't going to come out and play. You start thinking about that. Like, yeah. I mean, this is in the playbook now. And we love precedent in sports, and they're incredibly explosive. And sports are a copycat league, you know? I mean, think about, like, everybody who's decided to come back, and the first thing they think about when they think about, like, what kind of messaging are we going to send? Oh, we're going to get on a knee like Colin Kaepernick did 4 years ago. Copycat. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that while something like this that's so widespread is unlikely to happen again, this method of civil disobedience in sports is now in the playbook. And people really need to reflect on what that means at all levels, but especially the executives, the athletic directors, the coaches in sports.
Well, Jerry, like, I'm just a white guy. I have no clue. So let me ask you. The players, I think the players seem like they may be a little torn on the we should leave and go do things in our own community versus we stay in the bubble and we play. That was reported last night. There was a lot of guys that wanted to leave. There was some guys that want to stay. Just your two cents, do you think the power that they have or that they can impact can still go on while they play? Or do you feel it better suits the movement forward in society if they were to just end the season and go back to their collective cities?
Well, I mean, I think there's a level of basketball suicide to that. I mean, why would you want to damage your league when you have so much support from the league? Adam Silver listens to you. The owners listen to you way more than NFL owners listen to their players. So when you have allies like that, I mean, why do you want to, like, torch everybody for this, including torching yourself for this cause? I think you're being heard enough. Instead, it's better to continue the conversation on how you expand your partnership with these people. You want to be my ally. You want to be on my side. You want to hear my cry. You see the tears in my eyes. Do more to help me. And I think that's the next level for sports, and that's probably the final level for sports is to really get – not their popular rich players, not the LeBron Jameses to send out messages, but to get these billionaires who have the wealth, the access, and the influence to really take it to the decision makers. If you can get them on board, you get Steve Ballmer and his $72 billion net worth, and Robert Kraft, perhaps, and, everyone, Jerry Jones, even people connected to sports, such as Phil Knight or Bob Iger from ABC Disney, you start getting those people and their money and their resources and, their lobbying ability to the table, then you're going to get something done. Yep. You know, I mean, that's how the world works. There's a difference between having a voice and having power. And LeBron James has some level of power because he can wield it and he can threaten to walk away and certain concessions can be made within his league. But that's sort of the extent of LeBron James's power. He's leveraging everything that he has. But Jeannie Buss, who owns the Lakers, has a different level of influence. And getting this to become her issue for selfish reasons, but getting her to do that, getting those kinds of owners to do it, that changes the game. And I think that is the greater game that they're trying to play through all of this.
Great stuff. Jerry Brewer, go check out the piece. For black athletes, social unrest is not a game, and this historic action is an urgent plea.
Dude, goosebumps reading that piece.
Washington
really
Post
good.
Sports columnist. Go give him a follow on Twitter at Jerry Brewer. Jerry, thanks so much for the time, man. We really appreciate it, and hopefully we can catch up with you again here soon.
All right, sounds good. Thank you.
There you go. Jerry Brewer of the Washington Post.
Really
good stuff.
Really good piece.
We've tweeted it out a handful of times. Highly recommend going and checking that one out and reading it. Let's get to, before we have some fun, before we play some hurricane audio.
We do have a reporter standing in 150 yeah. mile an hour wind trying to report a hurricane, which is obviously devastating. But the fact that somebody tries to do this. I know you're the Weather Channel, but do we need to be doing that? I know it's a big hurricane. I can see it on that radar screen you're showing me. I don't need her to be...
It's windy. It's raining.
Right on the coast. I go, I can't move!
Before we do that, let's get to the big story that we didn't get to yesterday. We were a little distracted. Daniel Snyder in hot water again. And he vows to change people. Mm-hmm. He's going to change. We'll get to Daniel Snyder next on The Fan. Well, I remember a number of weeks back when Daniel Snyder was in the news, the owner of the Washington football team.
Yeah, that wasn't a great story, I think, for an owner to be a part of. And rather ugly, nor I don't even think it was really all that surprising either, given what he's been as an owner in the NFL.
Not really, although I will say he has two benefits going for him. One, we are a squirrel society, and we tend to forget things, and the next thing pops up and it draws our attention. The other is, when a new story is released that kind of goes along the similar lines as the first one, I'm not sure if you could have picked a better day than yesterday to release that story. Because that was so far off people's radars.
It was way in the back burner, yeah. The NFL was happy, I'll tell you that, because
exactly.
They don't appear to want to out him at all as an owner.
Yeah, they don't want any forced change there. Yeah, you just have this in your run-of-the-mill day in August, that story comes out, this is the number one headline, but in a day like yesterday... It's going to fall to the back burner. If you missed it, the Washington Post is continuing to report about Daniel Snyder's activity, saying that a Washington football team executive instructed employees to create a behind-the-scenes video for Daniel Snyder featuring the clips of partially nude cheerleaders pulled from a 2008 swimsuit calendar.
Yeah, they flew them down to a different country for a calendar. A group of them, if you don't recall the earlier story, basically said, we need some take your tops off. Mm-hmm. They're by waterfalls in a jungle taking pics. And it turns out they're also videotaping it and making one for the boss.
Hey, send me a copy of that. Brad Baker, who worked as the senior vice president and lead broadcaster one of the lead broadcasters along with Larry Michael. He gave this quote saying, Larry said something to the effect of, we have a special project that we need to get done for the owner today. He needs us to get the good bits of the behind-the-scenes video from the cheerleader shoot onto a DVD for him. Snyder has denied these allegations, saying he is unaware of anything. He said the videos were 10 years old, and he had asked, the Washington Post, is claiming that they have copies of them. And he asked the Washington Post to provide the copies of the videos to him so that they could be forensically evaluated and authenticated.
Really?
Saying that he doesn't trust them. There are other folks who
watch him say they were doctored and edited.
Right. There are other folks who have come out, one including Tim Delaney, who then worked for Washington, now works for the Cardinals, saying that he doesn't have any remember of it. He said, I certainly would have remembered that conversation if it had happened. Mm-hmm. The paper also reported that a former cheerleader, Tiffany Scurby, said that Snyder suggested at a 2004 charity event that she join his close friend in a hotel room so they could, quote, get to know each other.
Mm.
The cheerleader director was among three people who supported the account of the story of what had happened. Not a good day for the Washington football team.
Do you ever think back to moments that you yourself have joked about or said and it kind of makes you cringe? You go, God, I'm glad nobody recorded that moment.
Without a doubt, man. I got a million of those.
I can't fathom, and I do too. Could you imagine to this level where he basically ran a...
Hey, send me the new videos.
I don't know how else you interpret this. It kind of was a little bit of an underground sex ring going on. Some cheerleaders were asked to have their butts touched and boobs shown and sleep with individuals and hit on and sexually harassed all day. And this went on for about a decade. There's no escaping the truth. And we're going to find out even more, I think, as time goes on. But the second terrible story to come out about just an absolute garbage owner in this league. And I don't know if you polled the fan base in D.C. or the fan base that's all across the country rooting for watching. We got a few listeners that will text in. I don't know where it would come in percentage-wise, but if you were to say, hey, what do you think? If the NFL was to poll him and say, what do you think about us getting rid of him? Do you think the fan base would be on his side or the NFL's side? Like, please do that. Because I would say with the ineptitude that they've had since he got that team, most people would just say, yeah, can we get rid of this dude? He isn't a very good owner. And I've also enjoyed the stories of them trying to make him sound like a changed human being.
Yeah, yeah.
Dan Snyder taking a step back and allowing people to run things differently now. And I know he hired the first black team president in the NFL. You know, that's a great story in itself. And I hope that individual, Jason Wright, I think it was his name, I hope he succeeds.
It is there, by the way, if you pull up their Twitter page, it's like their background cover photo.
It's him.
Is welcoming Jason Wright to the
team. And, you know, again, that can be a separate thing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't change the fact that this dude's been trash for 20 years.
Yeah, this one is not pretty. The Washington Post has now talked to over 25 women about their experience of sexual harassment while working for the team. Most have remained anonymous, mainly because they have signed non-disclosure agreements for fear of reprisal. So that's the latest. He continues to deny it. He said that he needs to be, I believe he released a statement along the lines of, I need to be more hands-on with what's going on. He's trying to claim that I wasn't aware of any of this stuff was happening. I'm too far removed from the culture of the organization as the owner.
Yeah, even though some of his good buddies on the team are a part of this, including the former play-by-play guy.
Right, and that they had asked him to make a DVD video of naked cheerleaders for him. He is claiming he needs to be more involved, which I saw a couple of people chuckling on Twitter about, saying, don't you realize you're the problem? Like, you don't need to be more. That's the last thing this organization needs, man.
Well, and I know this can be a very fine line between over-policing and just kind of allowing people to make a mistake here and there. I've always wondered, since the Donald Sterling stuff, you know, is there an element, and I kind of believe that there should be, like, where these leagues and these people who buy these teams, there's a responsibility and a duty. You are representing a city and a league worth multi-billions of dollars. I think you have, like, almost a bit of an unwritten agreement that you go into of, don't be a terrible human and don't run terrible things and don't put people in really poor situations where these stories pop out. The NFL doesn't seem like they're going to do anything. And I know when that Washington Post story came out, everybody thought, oh, man, he's done. He's cooked. It didn't quite live to the level that I think it was teased. And that's very unfortunate because it's a very ugly story. Mm-hmm. But there was, like, rape stuff kind of thrown out there. There was your most scandalous thing you're ever going to hear. Mm-hmm. And it's still a very ugly story. But some people didn't think it lived up to that tease. That doesn't make it right. I just think now that you have two of these stories, and I think there's going to be more to come out to prove what they're writing about, I can't help but wonder aloud, like, yeah, you bought the team, you spent your money, cool. You're also running one of the 32 franchises that are valued in the multi-billions of dollars in a multi-billion dollar corporation. You have a standard to uphold to be a good human being and not... You're not going to be perfect, but geez Louise, can you not be connected to a cheerleading ring where you run these girls out for 20 years and offer them up to your best buddies or make them go topless for videotapes or ask them to do stuff to season ticket holders? Again, fine line, but it doesn't seem like that's that difficult to demand if you're looking from a league perspective, but they seem to be all in on supporting him as the owner of this franchise.
Yeah, it's not that big of an ask. Part of this story, too, several of the women have formed an online support group from their time with the team. One of the gals had a quote, Brittany Peretti. She was with the organization from 2007 to 2012. Here was her quote on the culture. Quote, it was like fresh meat to a pack of wolves every time a new pack of interns would come in. It was like a frat house with men lined up in the lobby watching women walk in and out. You constantly felt like there were eyes on you. So mm-hmm. Daniel Snyder, once again in the news, not for the right reasons yesterday, as another Washington Post story coming out highlighting the mistreatment of women inside the organization. And he is claiming to be more hands-on and denying any of these allegations about naked women on DVDs and the sleeping with a team donor close friend asking a cheerleader to do that. He's denying everything. None of it happened. Fake news. And we move on from here.
Well,
so there's your latest.
If he's going to do that, you challenge the journalism there, then that's fine. But I don't know what your excuse is going to be if they provide the evidence. I mean, are you just going to continue to say it's fake or it's altered? Or I don't know what he would do. But when you challenge the journalism, cool. But they've now had two stories come out, and they say they have the evidence. So I guess we got to wait and see.
That they have, Bob. All right, let's get to some hurricane audio, man. I was kind of glued to that coverage last night. It's crazy. A major, major hurricane hitting right in between the border of Texas and Louisiana. They send these weather folks out there, though, in the middle of these storms, and they ask them to do interviews. One of them stood out to us. We'll play that for you coming up next. This is a story out of Alabama. The university is ordering its faculty members to keep quiet about their recent coronavirus outbreak.
We just had a faculty member on yesterday talking about how bad it was.
We did. The tweet read, "Good luck with that."
Shouldn't you not do it? Like, if we're to a point where you're like, everybody, do not say anything. It's like, maybe you shouldn't be doing it.
What is this, Fight Club?
That's something I would say to you. Hey, we're robbing this bank. Don't tell anybody we're robbing the bank. Maybe we shouldn't be robbing the bank.
You just let everybody know our plans this weekend, man. Yesterday was quite the news day, and towards the end of the night, it started to become more and more evident that Hurricane Laura was a coming, and it was a big one. Landed in the, looked like right between the border of Texas and Louisiana. Started as a tropical storm, and it continued to pick up steam. It like became like a super hurricane.
This is a big mama.
It is now like somewhere just east of Oklahoma, I think, somewhere in that range.
It's up
like
in Arkansas.
It's in Arkansas right now.
Before,
yes,
and then it was expected to move.
It's taking a sharp right turn. Yeah,
across Tennessee and to the Carolinas.
Yeah, and then maybe hit Maryland and New Jersey on its way out. But if it floats,
they were
up
surprised
north.
It was still a hurricane up by the Louisiana-Arkansas border. Normally, they hit land, and then it shakes all the steam out of it and becomes a tropical storm and then just a big rainstorm. But
dude, I was watching a thing on Nat Geo the other day. It's really nerdy. I was just flipping around, and there must not have been any sports on it. Maybe it was late at night or something, and they had a thing on the Air Force crews that fly through hurricanes.
Yeah, fly through the eye of them.
Dude, nuts, right? So
they
fly
through it?
So it was centered around, it was based on like...
That's how they get measurement. That,
right.
They're trying to measure it.
I always just thought those were satellites.
No. It was based on like these fishermen who are out there in the Gulf, like trying to figure out is the hurricane, like where can we go? Like, you know. And so they're following them, and then they go up in the air with these Air Force pilots that are like, they go fly through it on a number. They do it like every day as it gets closer to landfall to try and track the speed and the wind amount and with the direction it's going so they can help plot it. Like, you imagine that job?
Yeah.
Being the guy
and
that's
then
flying
the weirdest
through a hurricane?
Part is when they get through the eye wall and they're in the eye and it's absolutely calm. There's nothing going on.
Yeah.
So like when they go
so the
to the
whole,
eye,
the
they
whole,
look down and it's super calm.
Yeah. There's
Oh man.
Yeah, the wind stops and everything, and you're in that eye, and obviously they're measuring how wide the eye is, how long it takes them to fly through it.
I think the wider the eye, the worse the storm, right? Is that a thing?
Yeah, I think the eye size is important.
It's important.
It's all about if it's girthy.
There's the size of the storm.
It's not the motion of the ocean.
Which is, you know, how wide a swath it will take. But then also this storm, because the winds were so high, was a little tighter. So it didn't cover as much surface area, but the winds got up to 150 miles an hour.
It was very close to becoming a Category 5 last night. It was flirting with it. It was right on the brink.
You know, I know Katrina hit in August years and years ago, and we've always had these hurricanes. Forgive me, though. I got to admit, everything going on in the country.
Sure.
Completely forgot about hurricane season, and then they're like, "Hey, Hurricane Laura's coming," and I'm like,
"Well,
Marco's
right behind it."
Yeah, there's another one coming,
like in days. Yeah. They think it might hit near the same area too.
What would your name angle be? You go with like standard, regular name, or do you try to go like out there?
There's articles on that where they go through the alphabet.
Yeah,
sure, but like,
so we're
Laura,
on
Marco. Those are common names.
Yeah, I think they mostly are common names.
Why not give it something, I don't know,
like the Hurricane Obliterator? It's more scary. There's just Laura coming in.
There's also rules on if it's
Hurricane Big Bitch is coming. Board up. She's coming. She's angry.
Well, they will retire if it's an especially devastating, like,
we'll probably never have another Katrina.
There will not
right?
be Katrina. Yeah. They will retire names and add another yeah. one because they kind of yeah. cycle through them.
Yeah.
So when it's like the British Open circuit of courses.
Right.
They will recycle them every six or seven years.
So I'm assuming like the Karens who are already dealing with what's going on are just yeah. like, please don't be Karen.
So it's amazing though, because you flip on the news and you'll see these reporters.
I saw Jim Cantore out there.
Dude, just live in the middle of the storm, like standing on the beach as 150 mile an hour winds and stuff blowing around him. One guy on CNN last night I saw was like, yeah, I think I should be all right. The highway's still open. Oof. It's like, what if a tree goes down, man? You're just screwed. So this was the Weather Channel, I believe.
Yes, this is Weather Channel.
And they went to a gal.
I didn't see the reporter's name.
I missed her name, so apologies. I saw it last night, and I go, oh, my God.
So here's what it sounds like to be in a hurricane.
The Calcasieu River. That one got me good there. The Calcasieu River behind me. Hard to even turn and look at it. You know, it's not coming up yet. So that's the good news for us here. Say it one more time, Jeff. I couldn't hear you. Louisiana. In fact, there's only been 3 known Category 4s to make landfall. Wow!
She's almost out of the screen now.
She it is even tough talk. Out there. Stephanie's doing
Maybe
her best.
Maybe you can talk about where it is right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Stephanie's doing her best to stand up.
Okay, sir, you do that. So I'll just...
No, everything's not fine. You're standing in the middle of a hurricane.
Is there an element of anybody at the Weather Channel watching this live? And by the way, go see the video if you haven't. She's almost blown out of the frame of the camera.
It's wild, yeah.
Are the execs or the producers at the studio going, oh my God, we might lose a human being tonight?
Yeah, like has anything ever happened to one of these field reporters?
Most of them are like that, where they're like blown side to side. The funny ones are when the people exaggerate the winds, right? Like the hurricane is like maybe a 2, which sure. people who go through hurricanes, they'll tell you like, oh, a 2, whatever. They're still bad, but you have a guy or a girl live at a 2, and you can see the waves going, and they're like, hey, I can't move! And right behind them is a shirtless bro just casually walking on the beach like it's no big deal. Yeah. Those are the ones that you're like, come on.
Dude, I would love to feel... I would never love to live through a hurricane because that would be terrifying, but just to try and stand up in 150-mile-an-hour wind, like what that... Because we've all been to a day on the coast. It sounds stupid to make the analogy, but you get like 50-mile-an-hour winds on the coast, and you're like, ooh, this is kind of... You're like pushing, and it's moving you around a little bit. Man. Imagine 100 miles an hour more than
go
that.
Go into like a secure wind tunnel where you're like...
just to check it out.
And say, okay, put it on full. Yeah. Okay, here's...
Could I walk
here's
in this?
80, here's 100.
That would be fascinating to try, just to experience.
And that's just dry. That's not even with rain coming in sideways and
or worrying about
else.
Trees or cars toppling on top of your head.
I mean,
look, crazy stuff.
It's I kind of felt that a bit in my mind when we golfed at Bandon and I watched your golf ball not move. I'm like, you imagine a hurricane wind, what that's like. That ball's flying 180 yards behind us. Are you kidding me?
Wild stuff, man.
So do you think that there... we know the media does not pay well. Full disclosure, somebody asked last week, we didn't answer it, a mail sack question. You don't make money in this industry. Unless you get to the top, you do not make money.
Well, I think Weather Channel people...
Do you think that gal... People
now,
like her make good money.
I don't know if she's a local, like, cause so it, they're usually work out. I know Cantore, who's like a Weather Channel guy, he's making dough.
Sure. He's a national.
He's the national. I don't know if she's a local person or with the national. If you're national, you're making six figures.
If you're national, you're making great money. But like her, there's a chance that if she's local, she's making 40 to 50 a year. And they're like, hey,
go stand in a hurricane.
Yeah, huge hurricane coming. We need you to be at the forefront to tell us how windy it is, despite us having visual evidence of how windy it is.
That's got to be a hell of a peck. Like, every industry has its pecking order. Like, here you start as a board op, intern, right? You do a little bit more producing. Like, you kind of work your way up the ladder.
Sure.
That's got to be a hell of a pecking order in the Weather Channel, where that's like, hey, we got a new gal in the field. Yeah, well, that's throw her out
from
the
local TV stations when it's a snow day or whatever. Who gets sent to Troutdale?
The new people, exactly.
If you're getting sent to Troutdale, you're the low person on the totem pole.
You're the fresh meat there. The old anchors are just holed up in the studio, nice and warm.
Oh, it looks real bad out there, Jam.
Oh, God. They always say, stay safe out there, as they're like sitting from the studio.
Well, I love when you see them almost being just blown away. And when you go back, it's almost always like a guy and he goes, boy, looks real bad. Bundle up, Jan. Coming up next,
right.
Man murdered. Should you worry?
Yeah, some random story.
You know,
Girl Scout cookies are back. Coming up next.
Al Roker's making great money and has made millions of dollars in his life. I've always commended him for at least being always go out on the live scene with bad
weather.
He's
true
guy.
To his roots.
Always
baby.
Been, yeah, he's been true to that at least.
All right, let's close up with something that's sure to get people fired up, because I know that has not happened quite enough yet this week. Something is back, and it's back for good.
It's the protests?
No.
Oh.
But we'll get to it next on The Fan. Pop it off, I'm kind of hungry. We'll get to what's going on in the sports world tonight. No NBA.
Is there any sports going on? I saw the Mets won.
Baseball's happening, at least.
Well, I know Giants played early.
They're playing right now. They got a doubleheader today. And then,
yeah, there's four Major League games that we know of where the players have all agreed not to play, but not all of them.
The Giants Dodgers sat out. Some played yesterday and didn't sit out.
The Brewers are playing right now. They're playing a doubleheader. Yeah. So
some are doing it, some aren't. Everybody's taking it differently. Golf is happening. The opening round of the second week of the playoffs is going on right now. So
I'd be interested to see. I've said this before. The NFL is September 10th. You know, if another incident is caught on tape or this is not changed, the ramifications of an NFL team doing this for a game, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
And since you guys are such big fans of it, you probably already knew this, but I wanted to make sure the masses understood it as well. Do you know what season it officially is?
Season.
You know what season it is?
Oh, cuffing season.
No, not... Well, I guess it kind of falls in the same category.
Yeah, I mean, we're, what, 3 weeks from fall?
It is. As of Tuesday, as in 2 days ago, officially pumpkin spice latte season.
Oh, God. Do you know what I saw two days ago?
Starbucks brought it back earlier than ever this year.
Of course they did, and they're going to sell it out, because I'll tell you why. I went to the grocery store 2 days ago, Dirt. I'm glad you brought this up. Pumpkin spice Cheerios at the front of the door.
It's out, baby.
Pumpkin spice. What was it?
Get your Halloween costumes on.
It was something else, pumpkin spice. And then get this.
I'm going carving this weekend.
The kit. What?
I'm just kidding.
I mean, I wouldn't put it. I know, Michelle.
She's big into holidays.
The kids are staying with the mother-in-law for two nights. So me and the wife are sitting down talking. She goes, you know, it's September soon. And I go, yeah, next week.
Uh-oh.
She goes, Tuesday. And I said, yeah, it is Tuesday's the 1st. And she goes, guess we'll be bumping out the Halloween decorations.
Here we go, baby.
I'm like, in September 1st? And she goes, it's COVID. You're giving me this. And
yeah,
I said, you're right.
I've seen that from some people. Like, there's nothing else to do. Let me decorate, damn it. Yeah, they brought it back starting on Tuesday across the United States and Canada, making it the earliest release ever of the pumpkin spice latte.
It's going to be 90 freaking degrees next week.
People still drinking coffee in the morning, Swigart.
Yeah, the thought of a pumpkin-flavored thing when it's hot out is, like, just the grossest thing in my mind. Like, I can't connect the two.
Well, that, and it's, like, the last thing you want iced. Like iced pumpkin.
Well, speaking of which, you know what else they brought back this year is the pumpkin cream cold brew, which is an iced drink topped with pumpkin cream, cold foam, and a dusting of pumpkin spice.
You know, we can make fun of that organization and business all we want. The reality is pumpkin spice is a good flavor.
There's a reason it's such a big thing.
We're
just
obsessed with it too much.
I think you
just need to go the Mel Kiper route and just eat a damn piece of pumpkin pie with breakfast every day.
I'd be okay with that. I love pumpkin
I don't know if
pie.
I could do that. I honestly don't know if I could do that with any dessert. As much as I like some desserts over others.
Well, but we say that with food items. Do you really think every day I could eat a cheeseburger? Every day I could eat a taco. Now, I think I could eat a taco every day.
I don't
day.
Think I could every day, yeah.
I could.
Yeah, but you'd want different fixings in it, right?
Yeah, you wouldn't want, like I wouldn't want the same thing.
Chicken one day, beef one day, shrimp one day.
No, I don't want shrimp. No shrimp. Carnitas, yes.
Shrimp tacos? Are you kidding me? Come on, man.
Get that out of there.
Oh, come on.
What are you talking about?
You want bottom feeders of the ocean on your taco when you could have carnitas?
When I marinate them in tequila, cayenne, cumin? Absolutely.
Go. Shrimp taco is at the bottom of the taco totem pole. I would take veggie and tofu before I would take shrimp.
Do you guys want to take a guess? So the pumpkin spice latte was created in 2003. You want to take a guess at how many just pumpkin spice lattes they've sold since then?
Billions.
50 million.
400 million.
Yeah.
Pumpkin spice lattes have been sold. And if you want to know, this makes me chuckle.
Is this Starbucks?
This is Starbucks. So just at Starbucks, they sold 400 million.
Yeah, it's in the billions then.
It makes me chuckle because we go through this sometimes with like Christmas music. When you get to that point, you want to be the first one into the Christmas music game. You want to hit that market early. Duncan has tried to jump the shark on Starbucks. So Starbucks started this Tuesday, which would have been, the 25th? Duncan rolled theirs out on August 19th.
Okay,
they beat him by almost a week.
Growing up here, we had some Dunkin' Donuts, and I've always been into the belief that they don't start running advertisements till a few years or months out before the business is in your area. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed an uptick in Dunkin' commercials locally?
I think you've just been watching more hockey. Yeah. The jinx. We both had that. You're watching hockey.
You're
that's
watching
why you're seeing Duncan.
But they're all over all in the Northwest.
But there's not a Duncan coming to the Northwest again?
I don't think so. I think those are hockey advertisements.
I don't mind Dunkin' Donuts.
Welcome to the hockey life, baby. So there you go. Pumpkin spice lattes back. It's fall officially. Go get your pumpkins this weekend. Baseball is being played. No NHL tonight. They have postponed their games.
Great game last night between Dallas and the Avs.
Great game, man. The playoffs have been phenomenal. No word. Have they said that tomorrow? Have they said when they're going to continue?
It doesn't sound like tomorrow. It sounds like they're trying to rework the schedule starting Saturday.
Okay. And I would imagine the NBA ends up doing the same thing that they get going again on Saturday.
If they don't have a plan to play tomorrow, then I can't imagine it will start before Saturday.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll just wait and see. But baseball's going on. Golf's going on. Tomorrow on the show, Heather Dinich will join us.
She'll join us at 12:30.
12:30. There you go. Right there at the Daily Ticker. So we'll have Heather Dinich on. That's going to be awesome. If you miss it today, let's see if I pulled up the tweet, so I cheated. We have Bart Winkler on from Milwaukee, Brady Henderson, and Jerry Brewer. Go check them at the Les Schwab Tires podcast, 1080thefan.com, and we'll tweet them out at Thurton Sprague and at 1080thefan. Thanks so much for being a part of our Thursday, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow at noon. Number One's next, listening to 1080 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.